not always politically correct, but always correct, using only primary source stories of those who were actually there. You're listening to Threads of Liberty. Welcome, everybody. We're excited to be back with you today. And today we have an additional guest with us. It's our producer, Sarah. And we're having her on because we're excited for her viewpoint as we're talking about a young couple in 1844 about Sarah's age and their journey across the plains.
Hopefully she'll bring some insights that will explain the naivete or
adventure
stupidity,
spirit,
if you will, of some of the young pioneers that crossed. And as we were talking about this beforehand, we had a hard time relating sometimes to some of the things that they did in this story. But we think that Sarah and her fiancé, soon-to-be husband, might be able to give us some insights into just what they were thinking.
She likes being on the producer side than she does being on the voice side. So we'll see if we can get her to talk.
She had her heels dug into the ground, but money talks, and
she's getting paid the big bucks here. Anyway, today is a story about a young couple, but especially a young woman. Her name was Jane Hinman, and her husband's name was Jack. History is often written by
men. Wouldn't it have been cool if her name was Jill?
Jack and Jill went up the hill?
Because they did. Fall down, yes.
Don't ruin my story.
Sorry.
Anyway. So history books are generally written by men from this period of time. There's not a lot of stories of women. Sometimes we hear about Dolly Madison, Abigail Adams, one of my favorites, Martha Washington, a few of those, but not a lot of just your everyday American. But women were heroic. Women are always heroic, but especially, I think, during this time where they were leaving their homes and their communities and traipsing off to unknown lands where there were Indians and they were taking their children with them. They were surviving wagon trains and going across the plains and Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, we're talking about a period of time here in this story of 1844. Where not a lot of exploration had taken place yet. So women, and especially Jane Hinman, was doing something that most women did not do and most people thought they should not do.
Well, you have a great quote from somebody in the newspaper about that, right, at the time?
This was in the journal. It was by Horace Greeley, and it was in the Daily Tribune. And if you remember, Horace Greeley was a great abolitionist.
He was kind of famous.
Yeah, and he said this in 1843. He said, "It is palpable homicide to attempt to send women and children over this 1,000 miles of precipice and volcanic sterility to Oregon." It's quite a statement. But basically, it was homicide. It's murder to send women out on the plains on the way to Oregon.
Oh, we're tougher than he gave us credit for.
I'm not going to say anything.
I know, but you do have a couple of other quotes because it was a tough journey. And you have some diary quotes from two other women that I thought were really interesting as well. It kind of gives perspective as to how tough this journey was.
How tough it was in the perspective of women that they weren't afraid of the physical challenges, really, of the journey. The hardest part for the women really was leaving friends and family behind, the bonds that they had. Mm-hmm. This is from 1848, a young lady by the name of Martha Morrison Minto. And she said this, "It strikes me as I think of it now. Of course, I was a girl too young then to know much about it. But I think now of what the mothers on the road had to endure, more trial and suffering than anybody else. The men had a great deal of anxiety, but still, the mothers had the families." But the one that was most striking to me was a woman that was desperately attempting to rationalize that what she had done was okay. And this was in 1851. And she asked herself a question. It's kind of interesting. She says, well, this is not so romantic. Thoughts will stray back in spite of all of our attempts to the contrary, to the comfortable homes we left. And the question, is this a good move? But Echo answers not a word. She goes on to say, "I would make a brave effort to be cheerful and patient until the camp work was done. Then, starting out ahead of the team and my men folks, when I thought I had gone beyond the hearing distance, I would throw myself down on the unfriendly desert and give way like a child to sobs and tears, wishing myself back home with my friends and chiding myself for consenting to take this wild goose chase."
I think there are circumstances in every woman's life where she can relate to that diary entry. Yeah. You know, times sometimes just get hard. but we can do hard things. We're made of tough stuff. And that's the story that we're going to tell today. This is about Jane and Jack Hinman. So Jane, her parents were in the American Revolution. They moved from Connecticut over to Georgia. And then when she got married to Jack, they moved to Illinois and set up their homestead there. But like many people at the time, they got the bug to go to Oregon. And there was kind of a whole exodus, wasn't there, about this time?
Yep.
Yeah, tell us about that.
1843 was the main exodus. Now, you have to remember that this period of time, Oregon was not part of the United States. This Oregon territory, this Oregon area, was jointly occupied by the United States and by Great Britain. So when they launched off, and most of them started from Missouri. Now, as I recall, Jane and Jack Hinman started from Illinois.
Right.
But when they launched off, they did not know that what awaited them at the end of their journey, whether they would eventually be United States citizens or whether they would be British. They didn't know. They didn't know a lot of things about this journey. The first part of it was Plain States. They went through Illinois. They went through Nebraska. They went through Wyoming. A lot of Plain States.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some word as to what it was like. But the thing that was the most challenging for all of the pioneers before they got to the Rocky Mountains, which is where this story will take place, was the disease. And that surprised me. Disease like the flu, measles, mumps, and cholera was the most deadly. They talk about the fact that somebody could get cholera in the morning and by afternoon they would be burying them.
Wow.
And the fascinating thing, and I don't know if it's a positive or a negative fascinating, but fascinating thing that they said was that in order to keep the bodies from being dug up after they left,
mm-hmm.
they would bury the dead bodies in the trail itself so that following wagons would go over the top of the graves.
And pack the dirt down?
Pack the dirt so that wild animals wouldn't dig their bodies up.
Oh, goodness.
So when they went out, this was a challenge of disease, of sickness, some Native American challenges, but not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. What do you get cholera from?
Cholera comes from infected water.
Oh, so like if there's a dead animal upstream and it's coming downstream and you drink that water.
They tried to carry as much water as they could, but then you come to that point where you're out of water,
anymore.
So you've got to make your choice.
Yeah.
And the problem is cholera traveled like wildfire through the whole wagon train. But the real challenge for this one to me, and that's one of the reasons we brought our producer Sarah in today, is this couple, Jack and
Jane
Hinman, decided to go it on their own. They weren't part of a wagon train.
Yeah, that's really brave now, or stupid. One of the two.
Take your pick. But Sarah and her fiance would be about the same age as Jack and Jane. And so we ask her what they were thinking. Why would you launch out knowing you were going to be facing disease that you couldn't avoid? You either got it or you didn't.
Right.
Some troubles with an American Indian, starvation, dehydration, heat. And if you didn't leave early enough, you'd be facing snow along the way.
And just plain old hardship.
Hardship, yep. Why would you do that?
If someone were to offer me 300 acres across the country, but you had to walk there, but you had the freedom to do whatever you wanted with that 300 acres, we would go. The romanticized part of it is grandiose. When you're sitting in your town and someone says, you have land, you have cattle, I'm there for a new opportunity. And not knowing what the journey was, why not? There's so much unknown.
Would you not have considered, though, that you were going to have to cross, half your trip was going to be across Plain States, and then the other half is when you hit the Rocky Mountains?
But what's the end result? Freedom. To me, that's freedom, is having my land. And so when someone says, go start your life, this is free, you just have to make that journey. You just have to survive the journey. I'm there.
And that is one of the things to remember also, is that it was a little bit after the Hinmans, but around 1848, the United States government started granting 320 acres, forgive me, but for every male that made it over there. But that, again, is the fascinating thing about the Hinmans. They weren't promised any land. That was not in effect yet.
No.
They were going there hoping to establish a homestead. How many acres, they didn't know.
The call of the wild.
As a young couple, that's all you want, is to start your life, to be independent, to have a name of something that you created. And so with that opportunity, they see Oregon.
Well, they and what, 80,000 other people did.
They and 80,000 did, 20,000 died.
Wow.
And I guess it's a little bit like you and I in our advanced stage of life.
Are you going to tell them how old we are?
No, I'm just not going to use the word elderly that's used on us. But in our advanced stage, we look back now as our bodies creak and groan. And
it
we
talks
wonder,
to you when you wake
yeah,
up.
Yeah, we wonder
morning.
What we were thinking when we were in our 20s that we did, not realizing that by the time we hit our stage in life, we were going to pay the price. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit what Sarah's saying, is they were willing to launch off, not really thinking about what the ultimate effects could possibly be. And for the Hinmans, it almost was
true.
The
it
ultimate sacrifice.
Ended in disaster. So Jane and Jack left Illinois, loaded up their schooner wagon with everything they could fit into it, as much food supplies as possible, their seeds, you know, whatever they thought they might need. They had four oxen and they headed across Nebraska, which took them a number of months because they didn't get there until fall of 1844. So right on the fork of the Platte River, they decided we better stop here for the winter, build a little small hut they did out of mud and sod, a little one room, and there were bison everywhere, and Jane was a heck of a shot. So she and her husband shot three bison and dried them for the winter, and that was their food supply for
which
the winter.
Probably made Jack think twice. If your wife could bring down a bison, you're going to behave a little bit better.
Think about the skills this woman had to have. I mean, and they all did back then, because I realize times have changed and now we have different skills, but they had to wash clothes on a washboard. Have you ever done that? It rubs your knuckles raw.
I don't use the washing machine.
Anyway, they were cooking over an open fire or on a wood cook stove. I mean, just the everyday chores that they had to do to exist was hard work.
And the story mentioned that they survived that winter of 1844 off of the bison that they had shot.
Right.
So they shot the bison. They ate the tongue.
Yes, mixed with Indian meal, they call it, which I assume is cornmeal.
Doesn't matter. They ate the tongue. That's all I'm thinking about. And the bison actually used to help them to survive and to heat themselves with bison chips.
Yes.
Which
yes.
are
the
not
smell of that must have just been
challenging.
Lovely. Ugh. Yeah. So anyway, so they spend the winter, right, at the Platte River. And spring comes, 1845, and they say, okay, time to go. Here we are. We're heading back out. And they load everything back up into their wagon, and off they go again with their four oxen. And they get all the way to just below the Rocky Mountains. And then their map shows them that there is a fork in the road. There is a road that will take them a longer way to get there, but is easier. Or there's a shorter way, but it's a little more dangerous.
And everybody needs to understand what she's actually saying here, though. We're assuming that there was a road or a trail through the Rocky Mountains,
well,
but
sort
very
of a trail.
Seldom was there much of a trail.
Yeah, it wasn't much, but there was something there. At least others had passed over it, but it wasn't a great, wasn't like a road. It certainly wasn't flat.
If I'm seeing two trails, I'm taking the one more traveled instead of the less traveled.
You and Robert Browning. Anyway. So yes, so they get to the fork in the road and they choose the harder path. So picture, if you will, taking your wagon and your four oxen up this little trail in the Rocky Mountains with all of the area that you're having to traverse, right? So you've got a rock mountain on one side of you, the little trail that you're on that is just wide enough for your wagon and your oxen. I don't know if anybody likes to go four-wheeling out in the mountains, but if you've been on some of those roads, you kind of get an idea of how little and narrow this trail was. And then the mountain drops off on the other side of the road, straight down into a ravine.
And if I recall, the cliff where they had their issues that you'll talk about in just a second would have been 300 feet.
At least.
The drop would have been 300 feet.
Yeah, at least, which is, I think you were comparing that to
about the length of a football field.
Yeah, yeah, not insignificant
no.
by any means.
No.
So they're on this trail and it keeps getting narrower and more narrow. And her husband says, you know what, I'm going to stand between the oxen and the edge of the trail, just to kind of make sure they don't fall off.
Okay, no.
You get off, Jane, and go ahead of the oxen.
I have to stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
What did he think he was going to do?
Maybe he thought if he grabbed the reins that he could pull them back, but he was underestimating the weight of the wagon.
Well, you're talking about a couple of 1,500 to 2,000 pound oxen for them, so you're talking 8,000 pounds.
And then you've got a wagon loaded down with everything that you own and think you're going to need to start a new life in Oregon. And so, sure enough, the wagon slips on a smooth stone, tilts, and because of the weight of the wagon, it starts to go over. It pulls the oxen with him, and there goes Jack Hinman down the ravine.
And where was Jane at this
so
point?
So she was up ahead of the oxen, and she turns around to see all of this falling down the ravine. She watches the oxen and her husband and the wagon just crash rock upon rock as they're heading down into the ravine. And I can't even imagine the terror that would have brought to her heart. Here is the only other person that you are with within about 100 miles, you assume, because the 100 miles was the next town back. And you're watching everything that you own and the most loved person in your life disappear out of sight down a mountain.
And you're not able to pull out your cell phone and dial 911.
No, there's nobody to call for help. You're on your own. But I have to admire this woman's courage and her fortitude. I mean, she's looking for a way to get down that mountain. She can't find one right where she is. She walks a half a mile back where she noticed that there was a slightly easier path to get down into the ravine. She goes down the ravine. She's climbing over rocks and she's in a dress. Right? Women at this day and age wore a dress. And I know men kind of laugh at that and go, ah, no, you try being in a dress and going over all of those rocks and sagebrush and everything else that was in the path. And she's climbing down all of these rocks. She finally gets to the bottom of the ravine. And she looks up and she, first of all, they're not in the bottom of the ravine. So she's looking up going, where did they land? And she finally sees a little ledge and she sees the oxen that are smashed to smithereens. Yeah. She said they were smashed like jelly, which is kind of not fun, picturesque. And her wagon was, of course, just smashed and her stuff strewn all over, but she can't see her husband. She climbs up to where she sees the oxen and her wagon are. So once again, she's in her dress, climbing up the mountain now, gets to where the oxen are, can't find her husband anywhere. Where is he? So she's trying to see what's the path they came down. And she goes another 50-ish feet up the mountain to another ledge, and she hears a moan. And just kind of this arm hanging over. And she realizes he's in that clump of shrub right there. And so she goes and he's bleeding from the mouth. She can't find anything that's broken, but he's not conscious.
Which is incredible.
It is. I don't know how he fell that far and didn't break bones. Apparently he didn't. But something internal was wrong because he was bleeding from the mouth. And of course you would be bruised beyond belief. I can't imagine the pain you would feel from that. And when he finally kind of comes to, she's cradling him in her lap, and he tells her that he's going to probably die. And she says, well, I will stay right here with you.
Yeah, I cannot imagine the terror that she must have been feeling, because if he does die, and I don't care if you're a man or a woman, if you're left out there alone, you're in trouble. But if he does die, then she's on her own. Like you said, the nearest town was 100 miles back. What is she going to do?
Well, she said to him, I'm going to stay right here with you, or I'll get his help, one of the two. So that's what she does. She gathers up moss, makes a pillow for his head to make him as comfortable as possible. She's trying to think, what do I do now? Dusk starts to happen, and so she just simply covers him with a blanket and stays next to him for the night. And the next morning, dawn starts to come. And I can't imagine how terror-filled that night must have been. That would have just been every worst thought that you could possibly have. Would have gone through my brain anyway, and I'm sure it did through hers.
She probably would not have slept. And see, that would have been the major decision is, do you stay and watch him die, or do you leave and he dies alone?
Well, and we're talking August in the Rocky Mountains. We're talking snakes and wolves, scary things. And she's there all night long keeping watch. But in the morning, it starts to get light, and he moans and kind of comes to a little bit, and she says, I think I'm going to try and go get help. But she decides where he's at is too small of a ledge. She needs to move him down to where the oxen are on a slightly bigger ledge, which was all of 4 by 10 feet. So it's not exactly a large ledge. So she finds a rope and she finds an axe. And she, let me just read this one part. She said, it was a welcome sight met her eye. It was the axe and the coil of rope, which had fallen from the wagon during its descent and now lay within easy reach. Passing the rope several times around his body so as to form a sling, she cut a stout bush and, trimming it, made a stake, which she firmly fastened into a crevice. And with an exertion of strength beyond her own, she lowered him over that ledge down to the next ledge.
Hey, let's picture that for just a second.
Yeah.
She's lowering a man that's most likely 100 pounds heavier than she is. And I look at Sarah, our producer Sarah here. And she was a college-level soccer player. She's in great shape. Mm-hmm. But the idea of her lowering a
her
man
fiance.
That's 100 pounds heavier down the side of a mountain. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge.
Right.
Where he lowers dozens and dozens of men over. Literally, it rips the skin right off of his hand.
It does. The rope burns on his hand.
She probably would have gone through the same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know physically
how she
did that.
That is exactly true. But she gets him down to that ledge. She cuts off a little piece of the buffalo. She finds some water in a crevice. She finds a pot from the wagon. She builds a fire. She makes a little broth out of the ox meat and the water for him. She puts some whiskey next to him. And then she tells him, I'm going to go. I'm going to go try to find help.
So she's been on the go for at least 36 hours here, most likely, with no rest.
Right, right. And I can't imagine the exhaustion, especially after climbing all of that. But she climbs back up the 300 some odd feet to the road. She goes another half a mile to where the fork is. And she's just praying that somebody will show up, because this is the fork where most of the wagon trains and the people coming west have to decide, just like they did. So she goes back to that, and not more than a half hour later, she is what you'd call lucky, or a little miracle happens for her, and six hunters come along. And she tells them her story. Three of them say, hey, we'll keep on hunting. The other three say, we'll come and help you get him off the ledge.
I think it's important that we look at that for just a moment. You can call it luck, as we have not called various things in other podcasts, mm-hmm. or you can call it providence. But the odds, it wasn't like she was standing on the street corner waiting for somebody to come by.
Yeah,
she was in the middle of nowhere, and six hunters just happened to come by.
Well, I know I would have burst into tears at that point, just so grateful that some help had come. So the three hunters and Jane go back to the ravine. They clamber back down again. They get him into a sling, bring him back up, put him on a horse, which the poor man's agony and pain. I can't even imagine how that must have hurt. But anyway, they get him on a horse, and these hunters just happen to have a cabin 4 hours away. So they take him to their cabin, and then they allow them to stay there through the winter so that he can heal.
So the first winter, they are in the sod cabin somewhere on the Nebraska Plain or somewhere.
Right.
The second winter they spend
in the Rocky Mountains.
In the Rocky Mountains in a cabin.
Exactly.
It's a long journey for this young couple.
It's a very long journey. And he slowly gets better. And these trappers, and I think they and this next little part of the story just kind of represent the goodness of people, especially people that were traveling in these difficult circumstances together. And they collected money. And they went back up to where the fork is. They purchased a wagon and two oxen. They went back to the ravine and gathered everything that was salvageable from the wagon. And then they sent them on their way.
And I think it's important to remember this, because too many times these days, references made to the early pioneers and settlers of America as being harsh and greedy and hard. But these trappers, these hunters gave up their time, they gave up money, mm-hmm. they gave of their resources.
And so did the immigrants of the wagon train, because that's where the extra supplies came from.
These were good people. These were good, solid people.
That's right.
They were not greedy.
Right. So they proceeded on. I might have had second thoughts about going on to Oregon, but nope, they decided we're going on. And so they went on to Oregon, they made it, they set up their homestead and lived into a wonderful old age. I just admire this woman's courage and fortitude and perseverance under hardship.
Yeah, as I'm sitting across the desk from Sarah, I look at what it would have been like for a young couple to make it. And yes, maybe you make it, maybe you don't. But then when you get there, you don't have your local Costco or Walmart waiting for you.
Right.
You get there and you don't have a house. There's nothing planted for you. You don't even have promised any acreage.
You're starting from scratch.
You're starting from nothing. But the honest truth and fact is that this is what made and makes America great. It's young people. It's all people. It's Americans that dare to dream and will take chances. Will try things that most people would not try. And they don't view it as a burden. It's an opportunity. It's a challenge. It's the ability to do something with your life that people in other countries may not have had the opportunity to do. And one generation before Jane and Jack, their mother and father probably didn't have that opportunity.
And they were fighting the American Revolution. But I think it's really important for women, young women especially, to realize the foundation upon which this country is built includes women who did hard things, and that we can too. We hope you'll join us again for our next story of Threads of Liberty.